Okay, good evening, everyone. Parshas Vayigash, Tavshin Ayin Tes. We'll start from the beginning, page 250, Perek Mem Dalet Pasuk Yud Ches, chapter 48, verse 18. Vayigash Elav Yehuda, and Yehuda approached him, Vayemer, and he said, Bi Adoni, please my master, Yedavana Avdecha Adever Bazne Adoni, allow your servant to say something in the ears of my master, Vayichar Apcha Bavdecha, and do not become angry with your servant, ki kamecha kefarei, for you are like parei. Okay, so let's take a look at Rashi. Rashi, in the words ki kamecha kefarei, this is the Rashi, the second line from the top of Rashi in the right column. Ki kamecha kefarei. So now, if we examine this pasuk, we know that Yosef, they found Yosef's goblet in Binyamin's sack, and Yehuda says, we're all ready to be slaves. Yosef says, no, why should you all be slaves? Only the thief is going to be my slave. You can all go back to your father. So now Yehuda approaches Yosef, and as we see, he's going to be pleading with Yosef to have mercy. But he begins by saying, don't get angry at your servant. Ki chamecha kefarei. Let me speak to something into the ears of my master, and don't become angry at your servant. Ki chamecha kefarei, for you are like parei. So when you read these words, and Yehuda says, let me speak to you now, and don't get angry at me, for you are like Paro. So, pshat, as we say. The most obvious, the initial, you see words, you see a phrase, and you say, okay, what's the meaning behind this? So pshat means the initial reaction, initial interpretation. So, ki kamecha kefar, for you are like Paro. What is Yehuda saying when he says, don't be angry at me, for you are like Paro? So Rashi says, the meaning of those words are, Chashav ata be'enai kamelech. You are important to me as a king. Zehu pshutai, this is the basic interpretation. The initial interpretation. What's he saying? He's saying, what is the meaning? Don't get angry at me, for you are like Paro. He's saying, I don't want you to be angry at me because you're important to me like Paro. That's the first thing Rashi says. Now, what does the Medrash say? What's the Medrashic interpretation to this phrase? So Rashi has a couple. The first one Rashi says is, Soifach lilkais alav mitzaras v'shaloka parai. You will be stricken with leprosy, as Paro was stricken, ayedei ziknasai, by way of the great-grandmother of this person you're trying to hold on to, Sarah, who was Sarah, alayla achash ikra, for the one night that he held her back. You are like Paro, says Yehuda, is a warning. Okay, don't get angry at me, for you are like Paro. You are like Paro is a warning. You're going to be like Paro. The same way Paro, years back, when he kidnapped the grandmother of, when he held back the grandmother, great-grandmother of this person who you're holding back, he held her back for one night, and he was stricken with saras, that's going to happen to you if you hold back Binyamin. That's the Midrash, that's the first Midrashic interpretation to the words, ki chachamayach kafar, if you're like parai. Dabar acher, Rashina brings another interpretation. Ma parai goizer ve'ina makayim, just as parai decrees is not fulfilled. Mavtiach ve'no isa, he promises if he doesn't do, he's all talk, no action. Af atokein, you're the same way. V'chizu yisimas ayin shomar to l'simay necho elav, is this what you meant to say when you said, I just want to see him? So in order to this interpretation, Yehuda is saying to Yosef, you're like Paro. Now don't forget, doesn't know it's Yosef. He's Safnas Paneach, he's the viceroy of Egypt. So he says, you are like Paro. Your Paro promises doesn't, Paro says one thing and doesn't keep it, and does another thing, and you do the same thing. All you said was, I want to see Binyamin. And now you're trying to keep him as a slave. That's the second interpretation. Dabar Acher, and the third interpretation, Ki Kamecha Kefarei. For you are like Paroi. Imtakniteini, if you anger me, Erek Oischa Vesadainacha, I'll kill you and your master. I will kill you and your master.
Yehuda
saying that. Okay? Now. What I want to focus on is what Rabbi Akiva Kanetsky points out. Now, what we have here is seemingly very disparate interpretations to this phrase between the Pshat and between the Medrash. The Pshat is, Ki kamecha kefarei, you're like Paro, you're important to me, You're someone that means something to me, and therefore I want to be good with you. And the Medrash is the exact opposite. You, like Paro, you're going to get whacked like Paro. You are you're a liar like Paro, or I'll kill you and Paro. And the obvious question is, why such a disparate interpretation? You know, we have a pshat, we seemingly have a good basic interpretation to the pasuk, and Chazal and the Medrash feel a need to take it to the opposite way. Why do they feel that need? And how do we rectify the distance in the interpretation between the Medrash and the pshat? What is praising and what is threatening? You know, how do we rectify such opposites, such a disparate interpretation? It bothers Rabbi Yaakov to say that the pshat and the medrash should be at two opposite ends.
Unless he's talking to two different audiences.
Well, he seems to be talking to Yosef.
Well, he doesn't know that.
But he's talking to Tzafnas Pareach.
Right.
But the person,
so it's two different audiences.
Well, but the brother in the room as well, right?
Yeah.
So maybe he wants them to hear one thing, which they understand better.
But what leads that? What makes Chazal want to do that? What makes them want to create this other pshat, this other explanation, this threatening explanation? I mean, what? I mean, there's a simple interpretation. Why say there's more here? What's forcing them to say there's more here? Now you're saying, okay, I don't know why it's forcing them to say, but this is, so again, who's understanding this? Is Yosef understanding this? Is the brothers understanding this? Both are understanding this? Is this a message to Yosef also?
Well, he knows nothing but Yosef.
No, it's not the point. The point is, it's I call him Yosef, but I'm saying, is this a message for the viceroy, according to what you're saying? Or is this a message for the brothers?
No, I found that such extremes, to me, could only work when what he's saying is interpreted by people in the room differently.
Okay. Okay, but that's a little bit out of the wording in the sense that it's being addressed to the viceroy.
But the viceroy doesn't know what he's interpreting. If he's saying that
only
one person,
only the brothers.
But apparently, if you read the medrash, the viceroy is getting another message too. He's trying to deliver it. Simply put, right? Looking at the words simply put are a message or another interpretation of the words of what Yehuda was saying to Yosef.
Because it was Yosef's, maybe if it wasn't Yosef. You're saying Yosef interprets it differently.
No. The Medrash is interpreting what Yehuda is trying to convey to Yosef differently than the Pshat. So the question is, what forces Chazal to do that? What makes the Medrash want to do that? And how do you rectify the fact that it's an opposite ends? Now you want to say he's not really directing it at the viceroy, he's directing it to the brothers. The wording doesn't seem to work. The wording seems to be that's addressed to the viceroy.
Oh, it also addressed to him, of course. But, for example, he doesn't want the brother to think that he's kissing up to him.
So. Yeah, but at the same time, again, the wording, he's talking to the viceroy, as if the wording of the medrash is, this is what he's saying to the viceroy. It's not something the viceroy doesn't get. It's something the viceroy gets.
Right. Well, only
so which one is it? Which interpretation is it?
I believe the viceroy should be getting the shot for Yosef, of course. Something else.
Who?
Well, the person who is the viceroy.
He's only getting one interpretation. He's not getting the other?
Well, Yosef likely understands the other interpretation. Yosef has no way to understand it.
But it's the same person.
No, I understand that.
But he doesn't say to
him. Okay, let's see what Rabbi Akmanetsky says. So he says like this. He says that the way to understand is like this. He points it this. He says this is a general rule in understanding how to deal when you have a pshat, when you have a medrash, you know, and they seem to be saying different ends, or they're saying different layers. How do we put this all together? So he says that the way I understand what he's saying is like this. He gives an example, okay? In Parshas Vayishlach, let's turn back, Lamed Gimel Perek Yud. Page 178. Page 178, it's Pasuk Yud. Perek Lamed Gimel, Pasuk Yud. This is where Yaakov and Esav meet, and Yaakov has sent a large gift to Esav. Esav says, "I have a lot. You can keep what you have. I don't need to accept the gift." And Pasuk Yud reads, "Vayomer Yaakov." Yaakov said, "Al na, im nametzase chayim beinecha. If I have found favor in your eyes, lokachta min chasimi yadi. You shall take my gift from my hand. Ki al kain reisi panecha. In as much as I have seen your face, kirois bnei alekim. It's like seeing the face of God, which means the face of an angel." Vatertzeni, and you have been appeased by me. Meaning, Esav is want to keep the gift. He's trying to be magnanimous. He says, it's okay, you can keep the gift. And Yaakov says, no, I want you to keep the gift. Because seeing you is like seeing an angel. Basically, he's saying, it's an honor for me for you to keep the gift. It's an honor for me to keep the gift. Rashi comments, on these words, it's appropriate that you accept my gift, because I've seen your face, meaning keep my gift, I have seen you, it's an honor for me to see you, and it's like seeing the face of an angel. Seeing you is like seeing the face of an angel, meaning I saw your angel, referring back to the fight. And also accepting my gift means you've forgiven me for what I did against you. Why did Yaakov mention seeing the angel? So that Esav should fear him. The Yoyman, he should say, he saw angels and he was saved. There's no way I can overcome him. Meaning, you look at the words, and you look at Yaakov's words. Yaakov's words are, accept my gift, because for you to accept, I have seen your face, it is a great honor for me, and a great merit for me, and a great opportunity for me, because I've seen your face, and seeing you is like seeing your angel. Okay? So, when Yaakov is talking to Esav, what's the message? The message is positive. Right? I want to accept my gift because seeing you is a big thing to me. It's like seeing your angel. But obviously, there's something more in here. Why is he mentioning angels to Esav? You know, that's a big, it's a very nice compliment to give, but it's not the typical compliment. If you want to say, I want you to accept my gift, it's an honor for me to see you. Why are we throwing in angels for? Why are we throwing in his angel for? The answer is because Yaakov's words have a pshat. They have the initial obvious interpretation, and then there is a deeper meaning. There's a wording in which Yaakov is conveying, look deeper into my words. There's a message you need to derive from my words. Not one that is as obvious as an interpretation of my words that's obvious. And if from my words you see I'm alluding to something else. There's another layer. There's another message there you need to see. And that message is, he saw a malach. He saw an angel. And if he saw an angel, this is not the person that I'm going to be able to kill or overcome. So Yaakov had his basic meaning, and then he had a deeper, not as obvious meaning that he was trying to convey.
Well, this is the same question that you asked there.
Yeah.
Who did he want to convey this meaning to?
To both messages to the same person. Why not?
It could be to you.
No, it's not to me. Why is it to me? It's very simply, I'm saying to Esav, look.
Esav didn't know that.
Who said it? He just said it to him. That's what he was alluding to. He's alluding to it. By seeing you is like seeing an angel, right? He understands that Esav can understand, right? The Yaakov is trying to say, he saw an angel. And according to Rashi, Yaakov is saying, it's your angel. He knows Esav can get that. He understands Esav can understand that. Any angel, to see any angel is a big thing. But according to Rashi, he was conveying to him, like, I saw an angel that looked like you. Seeing you is like seeing the angel. Why? You look like an angel? Yeah, but there's something that someone's to you and your angel. He understands that Esav gets that. And if Esav says, he met my angel, that probably wasn't, to give the Shalom Aleichem, to welcome him to Eretz Yisrael. That was probably something much more serious. And he survived. So that's a message. So again, Yaakov is being a diplomat, right? When he meets Esav, he doesn't go to Esav and say, Esav, don't start up with me. He talks peacefully. He talks respectfully. He talks in a way that he does. And it's not a fake. It's a way of conveying to Esav, I want to be at peace with you, but realize something else.
But what you just said, that he said it assuming that Esav is smart enough to understand
right.
the deeper meaning.
Right.
And it is, why would he even think that Viceroy knows about...
Wait, one second. Let's move over to the next stage, okay? Move to the next stage, okay? Now, based on that, based on the fact that now we see an example of where someone is talking in the Torah, and again, it could be, if you think about it, this could be any time people convey and allude to certain ideas, right? But this is what we see. Here you have an example of that. So it says, Rav Yankov, that this is what was happening here with Yosef and Yehuda. Now, let's see what he says, and then we can discuss it. Okay, so what he wants to say is like this. He wants to say that clearly Yehuda, now again, the first point is, what makes the Medrash see in the word, in the Pshat, that there's something more going on here? So the way Rabbi Yankov says it is like this. I'm going to tell you the way he says it. And the way he says it is that if we look at Yehuda, or Chazal looked at Yehuda, and Yehuda is trying to say to Yosef, you know, I don't want you to be angry, I want this conversation to go well, you're important to me. So he says you're important like Paro. So Chazal looked at Yehuda and said like this, Yehuda looked at Yosef. This viceroy, he's no slouch. There's a famine going on in the whole area, right? He's the one running the show. It's not Paro running the show. He's running the show. He's also a very interesting character that mm-hmm. we mentioned, that I'm sure everybody realized from last week's parsha. Mm-hmm. He says, I believe in God. You know, and Yosef is clearly not your simple, this viceroy is clearly not your simple person. This is a very, very capable person. Probably, if not probably, more capable than Paro. He's a lot smarter, a lot brighter, a lot more capable than Paro. And what does he say to Yosef? He says to Yosef, you're like Paro. You know, he should just be saying better than that. He should be praising Yosef for Yosef's. Don't call Yosef Paro. Don't call the viceroy. I'll keep going. Don't say it's the viceroy. You're like Paro. You should be praising the viceroy for what he is. So why is he going to Paro? Why is he using Paro as the example for praising him? He can use a better way of praising him. To compliment him and bring out his personal greatness, which is greater than Paro's. And he could probably be smart enough to convey it in a way that's not insulting to Paro. Why did he choose to compare Yosef to Paro? Therefore, says Rabbi Yankov, Chazal understood that there's something else going on here. There's another message here. Not that below the surface of what he's saying, there's something else being conveyed. And what's being conveyed is, you are like Paro. And if he is conveying something that you're like Paro, so Chazal understood now. Maybe we need a little more explanation as how did Chazal even know that the comparison to Paro? I mean, they could probably have definitely understood that it's a warning message, right? If he's trying to, you know, below the surface pass something on, it was a warning message. And as a warning message, there are a couple of possible warnings that we could say. That we can interpret into the words are like Paro. But I'm not going to focus on the interpretations themselves. But just want to focus on the fact that the reason why Chazal took it to the opposite direction, what indicated the indication for them to do that, to take the Pshat and go out of the Pshat, was because the Pshat itself has a question. There's something here that's wanting in the Pshat. Why compare him to Paro when you can do much better? And therefore, the answer is the comparison to Paro was actually not to be a form of praise, but actually to be something else. Something else similar to what Yaakov did. He praised Esav and he scared him. Here too, Yehuda is praising the viceroy and also warning him. Because there are two things that need to go on here. Because it is clear that Medrash definitely learns, maybe based on, you know, we can't, the Medrash definitely says that if Yosef would not have revealed himself, and he would have tried to keep Binyamin, it would have been messy. There was a lot of threatening going on. It would have been a messy deal, because they had to bring him back. Yehuda had to bring him back. He promised Yaakov, "I'm going to bring him back." So they weren't going to give up, you know, lying down. But so therefore, there's the pshat. There's the way that Yehuda conveys his message to the viceroy. But looking at the wording with the pshat, with the basic interpretation, there's something wanting here. There's a question here. And that now is the opening for Chazal to say that Yehuda spoke to the viceroy in a basic way. There was the basic interpretation, but there was the deeper meaning. There were the other messages that weren't as obvious that were being alluded to in the words. Now, your question is what? How's the viceroy supposed to understand this?
Yeah, it makes sense to threaten someone if someone understands the threat.
Right.
He just had no way to understand the threat.
Okay, so your question is he had no way to understand the threat. Maybe he did.
If he's so smart, maybe he did.
Maybe he did.
I
understand your question because that means you're assuming that, you know, the assumption is that the viceroy, he's a smart guy, right? You got to assume that the viceroy would get this whole question. I mean, the point is that we're assuming that the viceroy is smart enough to understand there's something going on here, right? And even in his praise, there's something going on. And he must be trying to tell me something more that he doesn't want to say out. And therefore, you can already sense that there's some kind of a more negative message there. As to how exactly to interpret it, you know, that you're like Paro, like, you know, I'll kill you like Paro, you're a liar like Paro, you'll land up like Paro. That's an interesting question.
But this is talking about the future.
No, past. One is the past. One is the same way who you're holding back, his great-grandmother caused the previous, that Paro to get punished. You'll get the same thing, right? The second interpretation is, again, you can ask a question, how does he know Pyro's a liar? But, you know, assuming that Pyro's a liar, he's saying you're a liar. That's also. And the other one is a threat. Now, I understand your point is a good point in the sense that, you know, that Yaakov's message to Esav, we can understand this, is easier to understand. For the viceroy to pick up the exact message, it's easy to understand how the viceroy picks up there's something more going on here, but exactly which one, how is he supposed to pick that up? Okay, that's a valid question. I don't know exactly how to answer that. Like, you know, how is he? I mean, he may be smart, but how is he supposed to pick this up? But again, you know, what's interesting is, I think I saw this somewhere, you know, even a king, you know, as bad as they may have been, even in these ancient times, they were not dummies. They were considered very wise people. They were people that were, in some ways, had a certain higher sense to them. And it could very well have been that Yehuda recognized that Yosef is a very smart person. He is an unusually smart person. He's a very unusual person. And he probably assumes that Yosef's viceroy knows the history, and he knows the history. He can assume that, again, you're dealing with people on a higher level. People on a higher level can sometimes sense, you know, the other person's understanding, and they sense that he can get the message deeper than another person could. But Reb Yankov's point here is to say is that you know, there's layers, right? There's layers. There's layers to what people say. And clearly those layers are in the Chumash, because we know the Chumash has different layers of interpretation. It's called Pardes, which means the orchard. Pe is for Pshat. Resh is for Remez. Dalet is for Drush. And Samach is for Sod. So you've got Pshat, the basic interpretation. Remez is hint, allusion. You've got Drush, interpretation like that. I can never find the exact word exactly for Drush, and how you explain each one differently, and then Sud, which is more like we call a Kabbalistic secret. Okay, there's different layers to the Torah. Well, there's different layers to the Torah, and there's different layers to the words of the people of Torah. And I think we could definitely say that, you know, we all can do that also sometimes also. We have different layers to what we mean. You know, but again, clearly in the Torah, where there's all this depth, when we talk about how people are speaking and conveying messages, here there's a lot of depth to what they're saying. And therefore, it's not like, you know, it's either this or it's that. You know, either he's praising Yosef or he's threatening Yosef. No, it's not either or. It's both, because it's all different layers. But the license to make those layers, the license to be able to say the layers are there, or to realize the layers are based on some indication. The pshat gives an indication there's something more going on here. Now Rabbi Yaakov says, then he says something interesting. He says, in the same way in the Torah you have these different levels, he says in people you have these different levels. Now when he talks about that, here in the footnotes to the Sefer Misle Yaakov, it references a comment from Yaakov in Parshas Lech Lecha, Perek Yud Gimel, Pasuk Yud. Let's take a look back. Perek Yud Gimel, Pasuk Yud, that's page 59. 60, sorry. Page 60, top of the page, Pasuk Yud. Now this is after the shepherds of Lot, the shepherds of Avraham, are quarreling. And Avraham says, we need to split. And he gives Lot the choice of which direction to go. So again, page 60, top of the page. Vayisa Lot es Einav. And Lot lifted his eyes, Vayaras kol kikar hayardein. And he saw the entire plain of the Jordan, kichula mashke, that it was well watered. Lefnei shachais Hashem esdom es hamayra. This was before Hashem destroyed Sdom and Amora. Kigan Hashem keretz Mitzrayim, like the garden of Hashem, like the land of Egypt, boyachatzer going to Tzayar. Vayivcha leilot es kol kikar hayardein, and Lot chose the entire plain of the Jordan. Okay, now. The Pasuk is telling us that when Lot was given the choice where to go, he looks at the Kikar HaYarden, he looks at the plain of Jordan, well watered. It's like the Garden of Eden. It's like the land of Egypt, which was considered a very lush. And I mean, even though Egypt needed the Nile, but the Nile would rise and water everything, and Mitzrayim was a very beautiful and well watered place for growing things. And Lot chooses this area. Okay, so we look at the Pasuk, and if I ask you a question based on the words, why did Lot choose to go to Sodom? The answer is, it was good land. It was great land, comparable to the Garden of Eden, to the land of Egypt. It was a great piece of land. Okay, what does Rashi bring down? So if you took in Rashi, the third line from the top, where Rashi says, Medrash Agada, Darsha Lignai. The Medrash Agada darshins this pasuk as in a derogatory form. Al Shahayu Shtufe Zima Bachalai Lot Bishchunasim. Do you know why Lot chose to go to Sodom? Because they were immersed in immorality. So the Medrash says, so the pasuk says that he chose it because it was a very good land. The Medrash says he chose it because he wanted to be close to immoral people. He had this, you know, and unfortunately it kind of came out later on. Before. Right? But there was already, he had this kind of, this draw to this place. The Medrash says the draw was because he was drawn to immorality. All right? So you got a pasuk that says one thing, and a Medrash that says completely a different thing. Okay? So, again, Rabbi Yaakov asks, where does this come from? Where did this come from? Where did the Medrash get this? Why does the Medrash see a need to have to now turn Lot into an immoral person? And that the real reason he's going is because he was immoral. Why do that? Why did Chazal need to do that? It's just because Chazal knew it. They had prophecy. They had Ruach HaKadosh and they knew it. They just knew it because they knew it. Yaakov understands that every Medrash has something that is said because there's a question in the Pshat. Something in the Pshat is lacking. Something in the Pshat has a question. It's not just said. Especially if in a case where the Pasuk says one thing and now you're heaping terrible description about what Lot is. So, Rav Yaakov says that the same way the Torah has layers, people have layers. We would call it conscience and subconscious. right? He says that when a person formulates a thought, they formulate a thought in their mind, right? That's a conscious decision. But then he says, but then there are, so to speak, potential thoughts. Thoughts that haven't yet come to the mind, haven't been formulated. They're, he says, that's when you talk about heart, or sometimes we talk about thoughts with kidneys. He says, that's where the thoughts are before they come formulated in the mind. That's where they're, so to speak, in a potential state. We would call that subconscious. You've got a conscious thought, and then you have your subconscious. And we know that our subconscious controls and influences us. So he says, and I'll show you the other example that he gives about this. But the example that he wants to say by Lot is like this. That what Chazal were telling us is that in Lot's mind, when he made his decision, his conscious decision was great land to move to. Great land for my cattle, great land to live on. But Chazal said, subconsciously, there was something else going on. Now, what made them say that? So Rabbi Yankov says that Chazal could have understood this, and if I understand him correctly, he's saying this may have been part of Chazal's higher understanding. Chazal had Ruach HaKodesh, a spirit of holiness, which is a deeper and higher understanding of things. But they looked at Lot, and they said like this. Lot, until now, was living with Avraham. We know that Lot became a very wealthy person by being with Avraham. That's why the whole fight broke out. But Lot became a very wealthy person with Avraham. Lot was raised by Avraham. I will add, and I'm not sure if Yankov means this, but I will add, Lot was not a slouch. We know he had a very degrading end, but he wasn't a slouch. He wasn't a nobody, right? As I recently saw somewhere, you know, oh, a couple of weeks ago when we spoke about the Arachai with Yehuda and Tamar, and he talks about Lot and his daughters. He says, you know, not every Tom, Dick, and Harry could create neshamas like Lot did. Lot may have not been on the highest level, but he was from the higher ones. He was from the better ones. And therefore, Chazal understood that there is something missing here. Why would Lot leave Abraham? Because his shepherds had a fight, and because there's a good piece of land over there. That should not be enough of a reason for Lot to have left Avraham. And Chazal maybe understood this because they see how Lot gained from it. They understood who Lot, what kind of person Lot was. It doesn't make sense for Lot to leave Avraham for this. Lot had too much going for him. Lot, life was too good with Avraham. So his shepherds had a fight, right? So tell your shepherds, knock it off. Is it really worth leaving Avraham and going to a better land for that? And therefore, Chazal said there's something deeper that has to be going on here. There's something deeper, something that's subconscious of Lot. Lot thinks, and to himself he says, you know why I'm doing this? It's a big problem here. We can't stay together. You know, it's really a difficult thing. And therefore, we're going to have to split up. And, okay, so I'll go to the place where I'll be able to, really good fertile land. Chazal say, that really couldn't have been the whole reason for Lot to do it. And therefore, they say subconsciously there was something going on. He was pulled. Now that basically the opportunity opened to split from Avraham and now to go to a place that was closer to morality, he took it. But not because in his mind he's saying, oh, that's where I want to go. In his mind, consciously, his conscious decision is, got to go, good piece of land. Subconscious, he's being really influenced by his desire to be closer to morality.
How come Abraham didn't stop him?
Because Abraham probably figured that he has to be the one to make that decision.
Well, but Abraham raised him, right? So,
direct.
So he must have cared about him.
He did.
But Abraham should have been smart enough.
If you want to ask that question, ask him why Abraham even said, let's split up. Forget about this medrash. Just ask the question. Right. Why is Abraham letting him split up? If he cares about him.
Well, what I wanted to push on this one, because Abraham should have been smart enough to know about Sodom.
Oh,
and
oh,
maybe
yeah.
About some inclinations of Lot.
That's very possible.
So then he would have thought, my gosh, if he leaves, something bad will happen.
Well, it doesn't necessarily mean that he suspected that Lot is definitely going to fall in. You know, he could have seen that Lot was the kind of person who wouldn't fall in.
But
I'm saying, again, if you first have to ask, why is he even letting him go?
Yeah.
And if you know why he's letting him go, which could very well be that Lot has come to a point where Avram says Lot's got to straighten himself out.
Well, he's not a good role model.
Lot's got to straighten himself out. He's got to be ready to. When Avram says, you know, we got to split, right? Mm-hmm. That was Lot's chance to say, I'm sorry, I'll fix things up. He didn't do that. And therefore Avram felt, if he's not ready, he's not ready. But I'm saying, the question is a good question, but I think the question is ready earlier, like, why is Avram letting him split?
Potentially we could also ask, he said, yeah, split is fine, but don't go there.
Well, you have to know sometimes how to deal with people. But I understand your point.
But he split with a lot of wealth also. It's not like Laban with Yaakov.
Well, they both had a lot of wealth. Even there they had a lot of wealth.
But they didn't want to give it to him.
Okay. That's true. Okay, so therefore... So again, Rabbi Yankov is saying here, we have another example of, it's not just two different things. They're happening at the same time. And Chazal recognized what's happening because when they looked at the Pshat, there was something that was not fully understandable, not fully covered. And therefore, they understood there's something more. Okay? Now, another example that Rabbi Yankov gives, and, you know, just to go through the different, just to finish up the examples he gives, is in Parshas Baloscha. In Parshas Baloscha, this is Yud Aleph Perik Hey. Yud Aleph, rather, Pasuk Hey. All right, page 788. Page 788, 5 lines from the top. Last word on the line. Actually, let's just go back to the beginning of the line. Vayivku gabnei Yisrael, bnei Yisrael also cried, vayemru miyachilenu basar. They said, who will feed us flesh? Who will feed us meat? Zacharnu es hadaga, we remember the fish, ashenecha b'mitzrayim achinam, that we ate in Egypt free. Es hakishuim es avatichem es hachasem es hapsolim es hashumim. And all the different vegetables and the onions and then the garlic that we ate. Our souls are dry, there's nothing. Built all we have is the man. Here's where they're complaining, right? All we have is man. We used to be able to have meat and vegetables and all these good things. Okay? Now, if you look at the Pashup Shot, what are they complaining about? Food. What's they complaining about? Complaining about food. If you take a look at Rashi, Rashi tells us. Did she bring this down, or is it Medrash? Pasuk Yud. So Rashi and Pasuk Yud tells us, all right, so if you keep reading, it says, Pasuk Yud reads, Vayishma Moshe Sa'am, Moshe heard the nation, meaning what they were complaining about, Baychel Mishpachaysav, crying with their families, Ishla Fesach Pesach Alay, each person by the opening of his tent. So everybody was gathering together with their families and crying. So Rashi says, Mishpachas Nasafim Ubaychim the Farsam Tarumasam Begoli. This was a public outcry. Families gathered together and they made a public outcry. Rabbi Seinu Amru and our rabbi said, Lemishpachaisav to their families, Aliske Mishpachas, they were crying about their families, Alarayas and Asaris Lahem, because now certain family members became forbidden to them. Okay. Rashi says, the Medrash says that what does it mean, or the Gemara says, what does it mean crying to their families? It doesn't mean crying with their families, but about their families. Because before the Torah was given, they were able to marry certain relatives, and now they couldn't. Now, Arias, right? There's certain relatives you're not allowed to marry. And once they got the Torah, they weren't allowed to do that anymore. And that's what they were crying about. Now we don't have to. We're not going to focus now on this episode per se, okay? But you know, what are they so upset about? But what Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky wants to focus on is okay. The Pesukim say they're crying about the food. And Chazal say no, something much deeper going on here, something much different going on here. And again, which one is it? Now there are a couple of different points to be made here about what the word maybe the mishpachaisa. Why is it important for the Torah to mention by to families? But Rashi says in his first pshat, it was a family gathering. It was a public outcry of families, right? This wasn't just going to people going to just kind of cry. We're getting the whole family involved, right? Everybody's going to be crying together openly. But Rashi says no, there was something more here. But Chazal say there's something more. They're crying about the families. So again, which one was it? Why say that it's about something completely different than the Pesukim say? So again, Rabbi Yankiv, that Chazal, Beruach Kachem, Chazal Beruach HaKadosh, understood, like you said, there are different layers to people. There's what you consciously think about, and then there's what subconsciously is actually happening, or also happening. And therefore, Chazal look at the B'nai Yisrael and they say, you're crying about vegetables and meat when you have mun. Now, that kind of question you can say in general, like even according to the pshat, like what's going on? What's going on? So maybe that itself is an explanation. But that's why I think maybe Rabbi Yankov says Chazal and the Ruach HaKadosh. Chazal and the Ruach HaKadosh and their deeper understanding, knowing who the Bnei Yisrael were, they understood that this crying over the vegetables and the meat and the onions and the garlic, when you have mun, right, there's clearly advantages to mun. It's not like mun is tasteless. You know, so it doesn't have the same texture. I mean, again, I don't want to, there's probably a lot even in the pshat that we need to say. But even after you can make a deeper understanding of the pshat, Chazal understood that this Klal Yisrael, it doesn't make sense that Klal Yisrael would be crying like this. Maybe what he means is, understanding who Klal Yisrael were, that it didn't make sense that they should really be making such a fuss about this when they had the mun. Therefore, it's got to be something deeper going on here. Something in their subconscious that's going on here. And that is alluded to with the words L'mishpachaisav, to their families, right? Which can be interpreted as with their families or to, about their families. But again, because there's different layers going on. There's different depths, there's different layers going on in every person. There's what's in his conscious, what's in his subconscious. The subconscious, something sometimes controls us more than our consciousness. And that's what was happening here. But Chazal understood it because, again, it's not two different interpretations. They're happening at the same time because there's different levels to people. And that's Rabbi Yankov's whole point, whether it be with the story with Lot, with the story with the people complaining in Parshas Baleischa, with Yehuda and Yosef. You've got these different layers of what's going on. You've got the pshat. You've got the initial interpretation that you give when you see something, but then there's something deeper going on at the same time. And when you say, and when Chazal say there's something deeper going at the same time, it's because they see in the pshat, something tells us. Something tells us when we look at the pshat, there's something more going on. But not because it's not what the pshat says. It's what the pshat says, and it's what Chazal say. And they're happening at the same time because they're happening within different layers. Either different layers in the person's intent, or different layers within the person themselves.
But we do that all the same. I mean, in normal life, with somebody, an adversary, whatever, we may have a whole list of things we know about and we can deal with, but we start off with certain ones that don't make it such a major fight. You always have your backup.
And that's what's happening here. But what's happening here is that what's happening here is they could actually all be happening at the same time. You know, simple people have to, like, you know, we got to start off nice and talk about the nice things, and then we'll talk about the hard things. Mm-hmm. These people were able to, like, you lay out, you can say it, you can give one presentation, and everything will be understood within those words themselves. Now, I think there's a practical lesson to this, at least when we talk about the different layers within a person. And that is that, you know, if we are aware, right, of the different layers within us about our conscious decisions and our subconscious decisions, if we're aware of that, then hopefully we can deal with that. If we're not aware, right, that there's something else that could be influencing, that could be playing a big part in how we're thinking, because, you know, really that has to be added here, right? What has to be added is that the subconscious, there's something else going on in the subconscious, right? And that's important to know, because if you know there's something going on in the subconscious, you say to yourself, okay, so what's the real reason here? What's the real reason? Or if there's two reasons here, and one reason isn't really good, and that reason is either making me think this way, or it's helping me think this way because subconsciously there's something else I want here, If you're aware of that, and you look back, you say to yourself, you know, I got to rethink this. Like, what's really happening here?
Humans are very bad at
that. And humans are very bad at that. But the first step to that is to be aware. Because if you're aware, before you make a big decision, right? You can't probably do this every time when you make a decision, but a big decision, a decision that has that can have a lot of effects on your life, on someone else's life, you have to say to yourself, am I really being honest here? Is there something else that's influencing me? Is there something else here that's motivating me? And then some, and I would add that sometimes, you know, those subconscious thoughts, they kind of like peek out a little bit at you, right? They kind of peek out. They may not last so long, but they kind of peek out. I always tell this story, and I can't tell the details of it, but it's like, one time I got involved in something, in a kind of a dispute with something, and I was like, you know, I felt, you know, I'm involved, I'm on one side of the dispute because of this and this and this and this and this and this. And one night, I just kind of, I remember I was like saying to myself, something like, hit me, and I said, wait a minute, maybe it's really because of this. No, it's not. I remember, like, I'm going through this in my mind. No, it's not. And after I realized it was, you know? So the point is that, you know, these things pop out at you, right? They may come out, right? Now, again, the first conscious thought, that's where you're really into, right? Then sometimes another idea comes out, which probably is in your subconscious. And it comes out. And like, hey, if you're aware of these things, you're aware of the dual, of the different layers and the opposing forces within you, if you're aware of it, and it sticks its head out, you could say, you know, maybe this is really what's going on. So knowing the fact that we have those different layers within a person, if you're aware of it, then hopefully you'll have a chance at being able to recognize it and deal with it.
Yeah, I mean, we should find a consistent message or consistent explanation to all levels.
Right.
I think that's the thought.
Definitely.
It comes with their history, too.
Yeah.
Like, you know, as I say, anger management, but if you sit down and see why you have it,
right,
it's the same idea.
Right. Okay. Let's now go back to Parshas Vayigash, because we've been floating around a lot of different places.
It's a nice list, though.
Sorry?
Nice list, cucumbers, melons, leeks, onions, and garlic. I like that.
All right. No starches.
Hmm?
No starches.
No starches.
Okay. Okay, page 258. And this is where Yaakov, Yosef, has revealed himself to his brothers. Yaakov is coming down to Mitzrayim. So, Pasuk Zayin. Let's start with Pasuk Vav. This is page 258, Perek Mem Vav, chapter 46, Pasuk Vav, verse 6. Vayichol es mikneyem, and they took their cattle, vesrechushem and their property, asherach shemeretz Canaan, that they acquired the land of Canaan, vayavoyim Mitzrayim, and they came to Egypt. Yaakov achozaro ita, Yaakov and all his children with him. Banav ubnei banav itai, his sons and his grandsons with him, b'naisav ubnais banav v'chalzarai, his daughters and the daughters of his sons with him, and all his children. Hevi yita Mitzrayim, he brought with him to Egypt. So it says, Yaakov brought his sons, the sons of his sons, his daughters, the daughters of his sons, and all his children. A lot of things mentioned here. Now, Rashi in his commentary only focuses on the words Benois Banav, the daughters of his son. Who is that? Who are the daughters of his sons? Serach bas Asher and Yecheved bas Levi. Asher had a daughter Serach, and Levi had a daughter Yecheved. Now, Rashi tells us at the end, Yaakov comes down with 66 members of his family. Six members of his family he's coming down with. When he hits Mitzrayim, he's got three more. Yosef and his two sons make 69. Who's 70? Says Rashi, Yocheved Bas Levi was born just as they came in. She's not mentioned, but she's alluded to. Okay? Serach is actually mentioned in the Pesukim. She's one of the 66. So Rashi tells us, who are the Benois Banav? Who are the daughters of his sons? What's that referring to? Two people, Serach and Yocheved. Now, the question is, if you look at the Pesuk, and there's a lot of things in the Pesuk, that, like, what's all his children, what's his daughters exactly, but Rashi says, when Rashi interprets the daughters of his sons, he says, two of them. So the Tziv says, he only had two granddaughters from his sons? That's it? He only had two? Now clearly, you know, clearly, the point is that they're the only two who count. But if the Torah uses the words benois benav, right? He came down with, it says his daughters too. It mentions his daughters. They're not counted, right? So why go and say that benois benav, the daughter of his sons, are two? Maybe there's more of them. Maybe there's more of them. So I don't know if the Netziv really means exactly to explain Rashi or not. But he says something very interesting here. So he says, it's a pella to say that Yaakov's children only had boys and not girls. It's like, if you read it, according to Rashi, is he had sons. His sons had sons. He had grandsons. He had daughters. We don't even know who they are, necessarily. Right? And then he has, then his sons, and then the daughters of his sons. Right? I mentioned the daughters of his daughters. Daughters of his sons. Who are the daughters of his sons? Two. Really? That's it? He only had two granddaughters from his sons? Therefore, he says, Elanira. The pshat is, the gamhemo heli do hide in the cavus. Oh, there are plenty of granddaughters. Et shala ella shalai hayu bachlau shivim nefesh. But they weren't counted as part of the 70. They weren't counted. When you count 70, right, the 70 are the names that are mentioned that the Torah lists, right? The daughters aren't there, right? Whoever these benites of our river's daughters are, unless you say benites just means daughters-in-law, right? There's no mention of daughter, right? Maybe here you can interpret the word benites of his daughters as his daughters-in-law, but the way that the Netziv is saying, he's saying that benites banav really means he had plenty of granddaughters, but they're not counted as part of the 70. Then he continues, v'loy oid, not only that, el de Yaakov atzmahir lo oid banis minashav, k'mashmai sakasav la'el laman hei, v'kum ha'kol banav v'chol banoisav. Yaakov had daughters. It says that when he thought Yosef was killed and he was mourning, what does it say? And all his sons and daughters arose. So he had daughters, even before this, there's a mention of daughters. I don't, no. He's saying more than that. We only know the name of one daughter, Dinah. But from the Pesukim, he's trying to say he had other daughters. I don't know why he has to go back to the word Benaisa before. It says Benaisa here. But that's what he does. Ella, Shalai Nizkaru B'Shmam. But they're not mentioned by name. B'Shem Shalai Hayu B'Hem Inyan Neigeh L'Uma Yisraelis K'may She'ira Yedeidina. Because, you know why their names aren't mentioned? Because they basically had no effect. They had made no difference to the Jewish people, as Dina did. Va'altisma, and don't wonder about this. Shrei gam ba'avram avinu ikatana b'babasra dafka v'mamel sholei eloi bas. According to one opinion of the Gemara b'babasra, Avram had a daughter. Had a daughter. V'loi nitzkra b'tayra, but she's not mentioned. Mishum sholei yatsa mimena zikar b'yisrael adairis, because there's nothing to remember about her for all generations. V'chanami ha'yu b'yakam avinu. And that was the same way by Yaakov. He had daughters. He had 12 sons. He had daughters. I think the Medra said they had twins and they were married. But, you know, he's trying to say, just looking at the Pesukim, the Nadim is trying to say, Yaakov had sons, Yaakov had daughters. Why don't we know their names? You know why I don't know their names? Because the Torah is not a history book. The Torah is not a trivia book. The Torah is going to tell us the name of someone that has an effect that makes some kind of difference to the Jewish people. Dina had an effect on the Jewish people. There is something about her life, something that happened with her, that is part of Torah, part of the Jewish people forever. The story with Shechem. The fact that, maybe we can even say, the fact that she was born to Leah, as Rashi says, she should be a boy, and Leah David should be a girl. But Dina's name is mentioned is because Dina's memory needs to be mentioned, because what happened to her had an effect on the Jewish people for all generations. Your name is mentioned if you have an enduring legacy for the Jewish people. If you don't have an enduring legacy for the Jewish people, you're not mentioned.
But is it possible?
Who?
Gershon, Eliezer,
and Moshe. So the answer is, if you want it, they had an effect.
But they were stopped right then, and nothing else was said about them.
Because whatever had to be said. But if they were said because of the fact that they have an eternal message.
The question is, so a list of names on this page, do you think that there's at least one mention of all these names in the Torah?
And anywhere else besides here? Yeah. I don't know. But if they're mentioned here, it means somehow there is. You have a question. You have a right to ask, according to this, what eternal effect did they have? And the eternal effect they could have, well, one second. Okay, hold on a second. Okay, well, maybe get an answer to that. Now, Voloisiksha, the Tziv says, and don't ask, Masha Kosov, Kola Nefesh Abal Leis Yaakov Shivim. All the souls that came with the house of Yaakov were 70. The pasuk says how many people came? 70. Now we're saying there's more than 70. It says 70. The vader hayayosim shivim. Now says that it's siv. They're for sure more than 70. Ela shivim eloyim uchuvanim neged shivim sari umesoilim. These 70 corresponded to the 70 angels of the nations of the world. Now I'm not going to go into this right now because it's probably much deeper. It's a deeper thing. But these 70 names are supposed to correspond or counteract, I would probably say, the power of the 70 nations of the world. So when it says the Nefesh Yaakov that came were 70, doesn't mean there were only 70 people who came. But there were 70 souls that came, 70 important souls. 70 important souls that came. What was their importance? They correspond to the 70 nations.
So maybe this is pretty much
that would be the answer.
The last mention, but
that's the answer, perhaps. And then he says something really fascinating. I just want to finish this up. This is really fascinating. And he adds, and there was there was something else about what made these 70 special. And again, this could really touch on a lot of things, but I just want to mention it because he mentions it quickly. They were also naturally, physically different than other people. Why? Shimon Levi. How old were Shimon and Levi when they killed at Shechem? How old?
Teenagers?
Yes. B'nei Yud Gimel. 13 years old. Hargu Ir Umaloya. They killed out an entire city. V'apagav Shayu Kama Nashmali Hayu Malo Atzim Rosh HaKasavdu. The Tziv says that, well, you know, the Pasuk seems to say that everybody had a bris milah, and he argues, no, not everybody had a bris milah. So it wasn't just that we're slaughtering, you know, guys laying there in bed who couldn't move. There were other people that could move around. And 13-year-olds wipe out a whole city. There's no indication anybody else was there. The Erev Anayinan Nasu Isha L'Hailin. Okay? Another thing is, we have Er and Anayinan, back in the Sur of Yehuda and Tamar. They get married. They're supposed to be having children. V'chein Peretz, and three two Peretz. Hoyle B'nei Zayin V'ches. You know how old they were? 7. 8, he says. Pretty young. V'dina bas sheish kvar hoisereel ish lirdefal acharel. And when Shechem went ahead and kidnapped Dina, because he was infatuated with her, how old was she? 6. He says. The answer is, you know why it was? Because these people were unique in all ways. They were unique in their stature in the Shema, and they were unique in their physical stature. If you follow this idea of the Tziv, this answers a lot of things. Answers a lot of things. Rivka's 3 years old. How could she 3 years old do what she did? Right? So we kind of struggle to find an answer. Well, again, the Tziv says you're dealing with a group of people that were unique. Physically unique. V'chein, he says, Hayu kol shivim nefesh. So all the 70 souls. The 70 souls that came were special 70 souls. These were unique individuals, very unique in all ways. And the other children, they were regular. So it's very interesting. This is a very unique mitziv, you know, approach. But he's saying that the 70 is, so again, when it says 70, it doesn't mean only 70. It means 70 certain types, 70 important ones. And there are other examples in the Torah of that, where you read the Pesukim and you would say, it means only this? No, it doesn't mean only this. It means only in a certain way. And therefore, the 70 are the ones who correspond to the 70 nations of the world. The 70 are the 70 very unique ones. Those are the ones that are mentioned. But as the Pasuk says, as the Netziv, there were others. There were sons and there were grandsons and there were daughters, which God, he doesn't even touch on what daughters here means. But it can be, but it probably means the same with the daughters mentioned before. There are granddaughters. We don't know their names because they are not individuals who made a difference to the Jewish people. The Pasuk says 70, and tell me there's more than 70. 70 means 70 special ones. So I just want to conclude when preparing this, it's like, wow, so Avram had a daughter, right? We don't know her name. I mean, the Torah doesn't mention her because she didn't make a difference. For some reason, the Gemara needed to mention her, okay? The Gemara felt it important to mention, but the fact that the Torah doesn't mention her, the fact that her name's not mentioned, right, is because she has made no lasting impression on the Jewish people. Yaakov has granddaughters, right? Names aren't mentioned. Why? No, they made no difference in the Jewish people. So what happened to them? Who did they marry? What happened to them? We don't know. But at the same time, you know they existed, but we don't know what happened to them. So it's very interesting. What do you want to say, Alex?
Well, there is an interpretation of the 70 that I know for years, that Hashem, so-called, threw his hat in. So he was one of the 70s.
Oh, to answer the question 70, right, right, right. Okay. Good night. Thanks for coming.
Yeah. Thank you. It says nothing.